They drove the horses without mercy, riding in full force back to Muscat. They were still too late. As they came within sight of the city towers and minarets, they heard the cannon fire and saw the dun smoke of battle sully the sky above the harbour. With Dorian al-Salil at the head of the troop, they drove the exhausted horses through the palm groves, and now they could hear the musket fire shouting and screaming below the city walls. Onwards they raced, and the roadway ahead was crammed with women, children, and old men fleeing the city. They turned off and galloped on through the groves, while the din of battle grew louder. At last they saw the glint of spearheads, scimitars, and bronze Turkish helmets surging forward towards the city gates. They flogged the last ounce of speed from their horses, and in a tight column they raced for the gates. The Turks ran through the palm grove to head them off. The gates were swinging closed. "The gates will shut before we can reach them," Mansur called to his father. Dorian ripped off his turban. "Show them who we are," he cried. Mansur pulled off his own turban, and they rode on with their bright red hair streaming behind them like banners. A cry went up from the parapets. "Al-Salil, it is the Caliph!" The gates began slowly to open again as the men on the winches bent to the handles. The Turks saw that they could not cut them off on foot. Their cavalry had not yet arrived. It was following in the second fleet. They halted and unslung their short recurved bows. The first flight of arrows rose dark against the blue and hissed like a pitful of serpents as it fell among the racing horses. One was struck and went down as though it had run full tilt into a tripwire. Mansur turned back, hauled Istaf from the saddle of the floundering horse, swung him up on his stallion's withers, and raced on. The gates started to close again the moment the Caliph had galloped through. Mansur shouted to the winchmen as he came through the storm of Turkish arrows. They seemed not to hear him, and inexorably the gates continued to shut in his face. Then suddenly Dorian turned back into the opening and stopped his horse full in the path of the great mahogany gates, which creaked to a standstill. Mansur galloped through with inches to spare. The gates slammed as the wave of Turkish attackers reached them, and the defenders on the parapets above fired muskets and arrows down into them. They fled back into the palm grove. Dorian galloped at once through the narrow alleys to the mosque and climbed the spiral staircase to the top balcony of the tallest minaret. On one side he had a sweeping view over the harbour and peninsula, and on the other over cultivated fields and groves. Earlier he had devised a system of flag signals to communicate with the gunners on the parapets and his two ships in the bay so that he could coordinate their actions. From this height he could make out through his telescope the forest of masts of Zayn al-Din's fleet showing above the high ground of the peninsula. He lowered the glass and turned to Mansur. "Our ships are still safe," he pointed to the Sprite and the Revenge at anchor. "But as soon as Zayn brings his war dows round the peninsula and enters the bay, they'll be exposed and vulnerable. We must bring them close in under the protection of the battery on the sea wall." "How long can we hold out, father?" Mansur lowered his voice and spoke in English, so that Bin Shibam and Mustafa Zindara, who had followed them, could not understand him. "We have not had enough time to finish the work on the south wall," Dorian replied. "They will discover our weak places soon enough." "Zayn almost certainly knows of them already. The city is swarming with his spies. Look!" Mansur pointed at the corpse, hanging on the outer wall like washing. "Although Mustafa Zindara is taking care of as many as he can lay his hands on, no doubt he has overlooked one or two." Dorian surveyed the gaps in the defences, which had been hurriedly stopped up with timber baulks and gabions filled with sand. The repairs were temporary and would not withstand a determined attack by seasoned troops. Then he lifted his spyglass and ran the lens over the palm groves to the south of the city. Suddenly he stiffened and handed the glass to Mansur. "The first attack is gathering already." They could make out the sparkle of sunlight on the helmets and spearheads of the Turkish troops who were massing under cover of the groves. "Mansur, I want you to go aboard the Sprite and take overall command of both our ships. Bring them in as close to the shore as is safe. I want your guns to cover the approaches to the south wall." Later, Dorian watched him being rowed out to the Sprite in the longboat. Almost as soon as he stepped aboard, both ships swung round as their anchor cables were hauled in. Under topsails, they sailed deeper into the bay. Mansur in the Sprite leading Batula in the Revenge. In the light breeze they were barely under steerage way, and they loafed in over the sparkling water, their hulls dappled turquoise green by the reflection of sunlight off the white sand of the lagoon bottom. Then Dorian looked to the south, and saw the first wave of the Turkish assault swarming across the open fields towards the walls. He ordered a red flag hoisted to the pinnacle of the minaret, the prearranged signal to the squadron that an attack was imminent. He saw Mansur look up at the flag, waved down at him and pointed to the south. Mansur waved back in acknowledgement and sailed on sedately. Then the ships turned in succession just below the harbour wall. Dorian watched the gun ports fall open and the guns run out like the fangs of a snarling monster. Mansur's tall figure was pacing along the gun deck. He paused occasionally to speak to his crew as they gathered tensely around the gun carriages.